This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Such a beautiful day outside. And fortunately, we have windows here at WNRN. This is the Sunday morning wake-up call. I have what I think will be a fascinating guest with a really cool topic, something we don't get into enough. My guest today, Kaz Komolafe. She's the editor-in-chief at the Cavalier Daily on UVA and contributor to the Huffington Post. Good morning, Kaz.
Good morning. That was perfect.
Was it?
Yep.
Once I stumbled over it the first time, I got it right the second time.
Yeah.
Kaz Komolafe, thank you for being here today. Sunday mornings at you walked in about 10:40. My memories as a UVA student, whether they were undergrad or a graduate student, Sundays at that time of day, not always easy to get up and be fully functioning.
No, I'm one of those people that doesn't need a lot of sleep, though. I mean, I guess it's kind of, I've had to learn to be that way because of the paper, but.
Well, blessings to you for being here and ready to function. We are going to talk about the Cavalier Daily, but we're going to do it in a broad sense to those listening with us today. We're going to talk about not just the readership of the Cavalier Daily and how that functions, but we're going to talk about the change of the modern newspaper to digital print, how the modern newspaper, the print newspaper, is ever changing. And I want to talk about some of the events and stories that have taken place that have expanded well beyond the grounds at UVA with Kaz today. Again, Kaz Komolafe, she's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily paper and contributor to the online Huffington Post. How did you get that gig?
Actually, through Cav Daily. They emailed me and they asked me to do a video project for them. And then they asked if I wanted to blog for them. So I started doing that.
Hard to turn that down.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Now I'm really busy, though, so I don't write as much for them.
All right. Well, let's start at the beginning, because to me, this is a really important part of where we're going to go immediately afterwards. What is the mission of UVA's Cavalier Daily newspaper? Certainly not just a print newspaper anymore, also doing some changing to a digital newspaper, but what is the mission of UVA's Cavalier Daily newspaper?
So I guess it can kind of be broken down into two parts. The first is obviously what we tell our readers about, and the second is who our readership is. So we kind of have this broad, excuse me, it is early, this broad overarching mission to inform the university community. So that extends from faculty members to students to people who just live in the Charlottesville area. So that's kind of the who the audience is. But then there's also this aspect of what do we tell them? And so we really try to make sure that we're telling them things that relate to the university or, you know, things that might impact higher education. Because if someone wanted to read about a national news story, they're going to read it from the Washington Post or the New York Times or one of these many great online sources for news like Slate or Politico.
Although we'll get into that in a little bit, that's not always true anymore. We go back to last summer with the Helen Dragas, Teresa Sullivan, UVA Board of Visitors story. And you were telling me how that has really ratcheted up the notice of the stories that the Cavalier Daily is choosing to write about.
I think so. But I think the really important thing to note for that story is it was UVA related. It was something that we had an advantage in reporting because we were right there. We knew what the students were thinking because we are students, and we knew what was going on grounds in the university community. So that was a place that we had an advantage over some of these national newspapers, which is, and I think that huge props to a lot of our staff members and the people who are working over that during the summer. And it was a really, really fantastic opportunity for us to expand our coverage and increase our kind of how aware people are of our newspaper. And I think that now, recently, we've seen with a lot of stories that have been going on this semester and in the past few months, since the summer, we're seeing that people are noticing a lot more what we're doing. I mean, with there's been a lot of talk of fraternity and sorority life at UVA, kind of moving into the national realm, where people are talking about the fact that our fraternities were asked to stop pledging early, and there have been allegations of criminal allegations of hazing kind of flying around. And that's been something that we've definitely been the source that people have gone to try and find out more about what's going on there.
All right, so we know that the mission now is to provide information for the university, the students and faculty, and our local area. Seems to be the general focus, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So let's talk about how the Cavalry Daily does this, and does it limit the stories that are provided? We talk about the recent Boston Marathon bombings. It's in the news for everyone. But when I look, I go back to look online. You can go to CavalierDaily.com.
Yep, CavalierDaily.com. Follow us on Twitter at CavalierDaily.
And there, I go back to Tuesday, and there it is a front page story. But it's, to me, you know, when I think of the headline, it's not the top story on the paper.
Yep, that's exactly right. We talked about that, and we wrote a Boston Marathon story about the university students and professors who are running in that marathon, and some of the Charlottesville residents who are also running in that marathon. And thankfully, no one was injured during the bombings, which was obviously a really great. But the same night that those bombings happened, our university website was hacked. So, and you know, it was hacked again the next night.
And you don't mean the Cavalier Daily website.
No,
you mean the University of Virginia website.
Virginia.edu was hacked, yes, by a couple, what we believe to be a pair of anonymous hackers. And we felt like that was a story that the university community would be more eager to hear the details about, particularly considering that if they wanted to hear about the Boston bombings, if they wanted to know what was going on there, you know, the Guardian US had a really great up-to-date blog about it. I was following all of this news, actually, because my boyfriend lives in Boston. So they had a really, you know, up-to-date blog about it. And you could read in the Washington Post or the New York Times. They obviously did a phenomenal job of covering the tragedy. And we just felt like our niche in reporting is stuff that directly impacts the university. And it's hard, particularly for a number of practical reasons. We just don't have access to the type of on-site sources that a lot of national newspapers have. We couldn't afford to fly someone up to Boston for the day. So, you know, there are limitations, and there are also really great advantages to the fact that we can cover a lot of local stuff a lot better than national newspapers.
Tell me about the positives and any potential negatives that go with working with such, and if this is not the right word, enclosed readership. Because what I envision is, and I think for many, again, WNRN can be heard in Lexington and Harrisonburg and Richmond and down in Amherst and Lewiston's 94.7. And those folks may not go to the CavalierDaily.com website because it's geared towards student and faculty, and sometimes towards Charlottesville, Albemarle, mm-hmm. and a little more Central Virginia area.
Sure. And so I guess in that sense that we do limit our readership, but we are primarily a university newspaper. It's our goal, and I think it's our responsibility to cover the university news as best as we can. And you know, there's no shortage. This summer show, there's no shortage of great stories to cover at UVA. So I think that we could be limiting ourselves in that sense in terms of our maximum readership. But I'd much rather provide the highest quality of stories I possibly can to the readership that we actually have a responsibility to serve, than kind of do this half-hearted covering everything not that well, because there are things that we just aren't able to cover that well that aren't related to UVA.
Our guest today here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call is Kaz Komolafe. She's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily. We're talking about a variety of things geared towards the modern newspaper and some of the pros and cons that go with writing for what I keep calling an enclosed readership. And do you think that's the proper word to use or not?
So, I mean, I guess enclosed could be one way, but I just prefer to think of it as a niche, you know, a niche readership. People talk about what it takes for a newspaper to survive in the current media environment. And I think one really, really great way for a newspaper to do well and not just survive is to focus and refocus on who your readership actually is. You know, you have to tread the line, sort of walk the line between telling people what you think they want and telling people what they actually want. But I think that bearing your readership in mind will always ensure that you have the best coverage you possibly can.
Do you think that now, for those who can't see, there's a generation between Kaz and myself. It's been the mid-80s since I was a student at University of Virginia. You're always reporting to a young readership. Do you think that when you do write a story at the Cavalier Daily, is the focus on both the students and the faculty, or is there a slight tilting of the story towards the students?
I mean, we try as much as possible to focus on the faculty. That's definitely going to be a focus of ours in the coming months when we launch our Digital First Newsroom and we switch to our semi-weekly publications. We're going to sit down. We have plans to talk to faculty members and see what they want from our newspaper. And we're also planning a kind of launch party for all of that, just, you know, for fun. And I think that we're definitely trying to refocus on faculty, because I definitely think that's something that has been slightly lost in the past few years.
Do you think that now, are any faculty members actual writers, reporters at the Cavalier Daily? It's strictly a student-run paper.
Yeah, we have graduate students and undergraduate students, significantly fewer graduate students than undergraduates. We have some faculty members contribute to the newspaper. We, for Constitution Day last year, we ran a two-page spread of solely faculty-written editorials. And, you know, we have been reaching out to individuals personally to try to get them to contribute to us, but more on the editorial side, not, you know, not on the news reporting side.
And is this, how much of the Cavalier Daily and the staff that goes into it are folks whose current goal and career plans are to remain in the news reporting or some career that falls along what may be used for the Cavalier Daily? And how many are participating in the Cavalier Daily because that's cool and that's fun to do?
We're actually seeing a trend, and it is an unfortunate one, away from people who want to actually become journalists. I would say I can really only think of a handful of people who right now would consider it. And I think that that will be significantly smaller by the time that they graduate. I think that people, there are a number of reasons for that. We don't have a J school. We don't have a journalism school. So I think there's definitely been a trend toward people going to journalism school who want to become journalists because they see it as more secure. They're trying to deal with the changing media environment and how uncertain everything is, so they go to what they see as a pre-professional school.
So are you saying, and again, I want to put words in your mouth, and but it sounds like what I heard there is because University of Virginia does not have a journalism school, that for a noticeable percentage of people working at the Cavalier Daily, it's a club. It's its own fraternity sorority group rather than career lessons?
Oh, absolutely. It is a club. We are incredibly social. I have some of my best friends are on the paper with me. Known them since my very first year. We started on the paper together. We'll finish on the paper together. In front of the last man standing, I guess. So it is definitely much. There are a huge number of social aspects to it.
But also very talented. I don't mean to downgrade because, again, our guest, Kaz Kamalafe here, editor-in-chief at the Cavalier Daily. The Cavalier Daily has earned many awards mm-hmm. from the Virginia Press Association, including yourself, 2008 second place education writing.
Yeah, we actually they just announced the this year's, and we actually won more this year than we won last year. We won a third place general news writing for our Sullivan coverage this summer. We won a first place sports page for our production team, a third place feature photo, third place editorial writing, which I was actually on our managing board last year, so second prize. I'm trying to think. We won a lot of sports awards, two sports first and third place for sports portfolio, and a third place for sports column writing.
So even though we chat for a minute about the fact that this isn't a journalism school, there are still very talented people who are participating in the club at the Cavalier Daily.
Absolutely. I actually say this is kind of a well-worn line, but I say that the Cav Daily is definitely a talent. It's run by talent. We're not a huge newspaper. We have, we have a 300 person staff, but because it is like a club, there's a lot of those people will write once a semester, or they'll come for the meetings with the Dunkin' Donuts little tiny donut creation things, and they'll just leave. So we have a core group of very dedicated, very talented people who kind of produce the paper every day.
Again, Cavalier Daily editor-in-chief Kaz Kamalafe. We'll open up the phones in just a minute. If you have a question or a comment to make, we're going to talk about modern day newspapers and the change of the Cavalier Daily and becoming is it strictly at digital paper?
No,
we'll still have print paper.
We're still going to have print papers. This is actually, I was interviewed by someone from USA Today a couple of months ago, and they got it wrong. They said that we're going digital only, and we're not going digital only. We still believe that the print product has value. We're going to obviously shift the way that looks and some of the content that's going to be featured, because we are only going to be producing the paper on Monday and Thursday. So there will be a paper for you to pick up on stands on Monday and Thursday. Go to our website to find out where.
All right. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about that. And throughout the hour, I have no doubt that the Boston Marathon is being, bombings being the, I guess, sort of the biggest news in the last week will be part of our conversation. Rick Moore at WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Kaz Kamalafe, she's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily.
And support for WNRN Today coming from TNN Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, TNN specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. TNN offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. TNN Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com. WNRN thanks Just Curry for their support of independent music radio. Just Curry has just opened at 425 East Main Street on Charlottesville's downtown mall. Just Curry is back and serves Indo-Caribbean curries with vegetarian options Monday through Saturday. You can find Just Curry on Facebook.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
All right, back in action with our guest, Kaz Komolafe. Kaz, people always. How about I brought up the topic about young writers. Do you ever hear any comments or compliments, complaints about a young journalist trying to write about a difficult topic?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had a massive digital media conference yesterday, and one of the things that the panelist said at the very end, almost like a kick in the teeth, was young journalists don't know how to write anymore. And I think that I have definitely heard people say that before. I think that there's this idea that this generation isn't taught how to write well. We aren't taught grammar. There's not that focus in school. But I think that that's definitely one of the complaints I've heard. But also, you know, I think complaints and comment sections are always skewed toward the negative. I've had people in person come up to me and say, you know, great job on this. And other people who work at Charlottesville publications email me specifically to say, you know, I think you guys did a really great job on this story. So, sure, I think there are definitely pitfalls and things that young journalists have to be aware of. But I think that young journalists are particularly well suited to adapting to the social media, online journalism that is becoming so popular and kind of so essential.
You know, what pops into my mind is that young journalists don't have the history for comparison purposes. I had a conversation with a friend about the recent news, the Boston massacre bombings, and how much of that was tied to, at least early on, the news comparisons you often heard about 9/11.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I heard
I'm guessing at your age, you were less than 10 at the time of 9/11. But then if you also hear about other, not just journalism stories, but for many parts of life, is that the younger you are, the less tied into the box that you may be, and you make fewer assumptions and issues of that sort. Comment on that for me.
I don't think it's necessarily true that we make fewer assumptions. I think we make plenty of assumptions. I also think it's, you know, as was seen this week with a lot of the misreporting about the Boston Marathon, you know, young journalists in the digital journalism is very, very prone to quickness, actually. I think it's prone to assumption. Sometimes you think, oh, well, because it was on social media or because this person told me, it must be true. And I think that there really is no, I don't think that we make assumptions less.
We'll open up the phone lines for anybody who wants to call in with a question or a comment. Again, our guest today, Kaz Komolafe, she's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily newspaper. She's also a contributor to the Huffington Post online. The phone number is 979-0919. You can also call us at 877-WNRN-ROCKS. You mentioned digital media, sort of people misreporting, falsely reporting. Let's jump into that for a second. Do you think that there are certainly many positives, and we'll get into that, but this is what your comment triggered this to pop up first as a negative part of social media, where everyone wants to be first.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to wait until midnight or 2 a.m. whenever your deadline is for printing the paper. Give me some feedback on that.
I mean, and also when you're tweeting, you have 140 characters. I don't know the last time you tried to write a story in 140 characters, but let me tell you, it's not easy. I think that there is a lot lost in the community in writing sort of such short, what is supposed to be pithy commentary. And I think that the big, when you're talking about social media and some of the big concerns with social media, that would be my first one. I know when CNN first started reporting the Boston Marathon, They said something like, and this is obviously not going to be 100% accurate, 100% quoted, it's going to be paraphrasing. They said something like, initial reports are surrounding events such as these are almost always inaccurate. And so I think that there's a huge...
But the report is still made.
Yeah, but the report is still made because you know what?
With the label of CNN on it, which for many people makes it a guaranteed piece
exactly.
of news.
Exactly. And I think that something that's really... There are two ways to go about it, right? The reader is more wary of the stuff that they consider to be true, or the initial reporting source has to be more careful about what they tweet.
All right. Again, our guest today, Kaz Komolafe. She's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily Newspaper. We got a call from Gary. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Rick. Good to hear this program. Kaz, I'm 64. I live out in Albemarle County. I have no connection with the university. I read your paper through RSS feeds and check it myself. You people are doing a fantastic job. You did a tremendous job on the Sullivan experiences on ground this past year. I've listened to your previous editor at a journalism conference down in Lynchburg a few months ago. I have 6 years' experience in weekly newspapers here and in the Midwest, and over 10 years' experience in radio reporting, and you folks are doing a great job. I commend you on looking towards your niche. You do have an audience that depends on you. I'm kind of outside that audience, but I agree you need to focus on your audience, and they will stick with you. The question I have for you is, how many hours a week do you students put into this in addition to your studies, and how are you doing financially? And I'll just hang up and listen to your answer.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay, so I'll answer your first question. So in terms of the amount of time we put in, it really does vary. I put in probably scary amounts of time, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, I guess.
It's frightening.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening. I don't sleep a whole lot. And it's the reason it is so much is because it can stretch into the wee hours in the morning, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And then I wake up. I have 8 a.m. classes. I'm definitely the exception. Most people who work in the paper do not schedule 8 a.m. classes, but I like to get out of bed and kind of start the day. But then there are people who spend maybe just their few hours writing their one news story, or their couple of hours writing their column. It can really vary, but once you kind of get to on the managing board, it really does ratchet up. And so financially, like all newspapers, we've definitely been hit with a decline in print revenue. There's a national trend downward, and so we're definitely seeing that. We made the decision to cut down to 4 days a week last year, a year and 2 months ago, primarily because of those financial reasons. We've kind of stabilized a little bit since then, but it would be difficult to see how we could continue along with the status quo and still remain financially viable. The move to 2 days a week in August, sorry, I'm kind of adding all of this information in, but in August we will be moving to a semi-weekly print edition on Monday and Thursday, and we'll be producing daily news content throughout the week, so Monday to, 7 days a week, 24/7. So, without that move, it would be very difficult to see how we can continue financially.
Gary, thanks for the phone call. Anyone else who wants to call in with a question or a comment on today's topic, or to our guest, Kaz Komolafe, the editor-in-chief at the Cavalier Daily, our phone number here, 979-0919, or call us if you're a little bit out of the circle at 877-WNRN-ROCKS, 1130 here on the show. Kaz, you're talking about, Gary asked about finances. Now, does the Cavalier Daily get a chunk of change from the university, or is it 100% advertising?
Yeah, it's 100% advertising, and we actually have student ad reps. We don't have anyone any professional ad reps, that might be something we are considering changing in the future, bringing in a professional. But we, since the 1970s, have been financially and editorially independent from the university, which is what's kind of allowed us to say a lot of the things that we've said. You know, I really value, and in the past few months in particular, since becoming editor-in-chief, have really valued the fact that the university can't tell us what to do. So when I get emails saying, you know, I didn't like this editorial you wrote, or I didn't like this opinion column you published, I'm like, don't care.
And you're getting that, I'm not asking you to pick on specific people, but it sounds like what you're saying is that you have gotten those emails from staff or executives or et cetera from the university, not just another student who says I didn't like that?
No, absolutely. Definitely from the university. And it's kind of to be expected. The university doesn't, I mean, you wouldn't like if someone wrote something that implied that you weren't doing what you should be doing, right? I mean, whether it was true or not. So definitely, I think that we do see that on a fairly regular basis.
Tell me a minute about writing. The word that comes to mind is disparaging articles about the school that you've chosen to go to. Because when we, and we'll get into details about some later, but let's, the one that everyone is familiar with is Rector Helen Dragas and UVA President Teresa Sullivan and the events that went down last summer. And I don't know how heavily involved in that you were, because you became executive or editor-in-chief this past February, correct?
Yeah.
We had Matt Cameron on last June to talk about this. But there are certainly other articles, other topics and stories that have come out since then that may not put the university in a positive light. Mm-hmm. You talked about, or you mentioned briefly about fraternity sorority issues that have come to light in the last several months. When you go to write an article or have to publish an article as the editor-in-chief that puts your university in a negative light, what are the feelings about that as a person stepping outside of your role at the Cavalier Daily?
So, well, to kind of the Sullivan, I guess we could use the Sullivan example because that is what people are familiar with. So I actually was managing editor before I was editor-in-chief. So I was on the managing board last year. And so I was kind of...
What's the difference in the roles, real quick?
Oh, so managing editor actually handles all of the literary side of the paper. So news, sports, life, arts and entertainment, health and science, and I think that's the last section. Oh, and our feature section.
So you would have been, mm-hmm. in that role, you would have been overseeing, yeah. the stories that went to print on this,
yeah.
on this topic.
Exactly. But a lot of that was self-motivated individuals. We had some great reporters on the ground who were doing all of the legwork. I was just there. In terms of when you're writing a negative story about the university, I think it's healthy to approach everything with a good dose of cynicism and critical analysis. I love UVA. I chose to come here 3 years ago, and I don't regret the decision that I made. But I think that they're like everything, you know. It's good to offer constructive criticism, because all I want is for UVA to be better, so that when I graduate, I can say I made this place better, or, you know, this place has become better, or, you know, look at what great things my university is doing.
11:35 here on WNRN Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
WNRN is supported by Jefferson Theater, presenting Papadozio with Aligning Minds Sunday. Formed in Athens, Ohio, Papadozio has created a home at the forefront of live electronica since 2006. Tickets for tonight's show, jeffersontheater.com. Independent Music Radio WNRN is supported by Calvino Cafe, 408 West Main Street. At Calvino Cafe, you'll find breakfast egg paninis and flatbread wraps available until 11 a.m. and Mediterranean flatbread wraps and pizza from 11:30 till 3:30, plus smoothies, coffees, teas, and hot chocolate. The alternative to the breakfast bagel, Calvino Cafe, from the people who bring you Orzo in the Main Street Market.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Holiday. North Branch School is celebrating 30 years of providing hands-on education for students in preschool through 8th grade at Band Fair 11 on May 11 at Afton's Cardinal Point Winery. The fun begins at 1 p.m. and continues through the afternoon with local music, children's activities, food, and Cardinal Point wine. To purchase and save advance tickets, call North Branch School at 540-456-8450 or email info at north-branch-school.com. All proceeds benefit the Needs-Based Financial Assistance Fund at North Branch School. I'm Bonnie Holiday, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here I am with our guest today, Kaz Komolafe. She's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily, as well as being a contributor to the Huffington Post. Kaz, we were chatting a minute ago. By the way, if you want to chat with us, 979-0919. Call up and ask a question, make a comment, like Gary did, 979-0919, 877-WNRN Rocks. Kaz, you were made a comment about you and your role at the Cavalier Daily and how that falls into the University of Virginia. When we talk about social media, how does the writer, the editor, remove your own feelings and thoughts on the topic at hand by tweeting? You have 140 words to do so. Many people that I've seen are tweeting, not necessarily at the Cavalier Daily, and I don't know if this is correct or not in regards to the CD, but have their own tweet address, mm-hmm. and they are working from that as well as providing personal comments. And how do you, is that okay?
So I have a Twitter. I have a Twitter, everyone. Follow me. And I mean, I tweet personal things and I tweet things about Cav Daily and I tweet things that relate to reporting I'm doing. When the virginia.edu website was hacked last week, I interviewed the hackers on my Twitter account. And I think that There are definitely people who say have two Twitter addresses, have one that's professional and have one that's personal. But Twitter is also about creating a personality. So I tweet personal things all the time. I tweet things about the fact that only 12 people ever show up to my 100-person lecture at 8 o'clock in the morning. Surprise, surprise. I tweet pictures of food that I'm eating, or I tweet pictures from, I tweeted from here when I walked in. I tweeted, listen to me on WNRN this morning. I'm going to be on in 10 minutes. So I think that it's good to create personality. And I think that it's important to kind of tweet personal things as well as professional things from your Twitter account. But obviously, someone said something yesterday at our digital conference that we had that I thought was really interesting. They said, consider everything that you put on Twitter and Facebook as on your resume. So don't tweet things about, you know, I guess alcohol, drugs. Those are pretty not, I think they're safe topics to say that should
like
be
that
not
idea.
On
yes,
there.
Yes.
I know. And be careful. I think you can find, Google search yourself. Right now, Google search yourself right now. You'd be scared about the types of things that come up.
But when you are an author, a reporter, I guess is the more proper word, the editor of the newspaper, how do you separate the story, the factual story, from your own comments that may be a day old, a week old, or 2 weeks upcoming so that I can have belief and faith that you are not writing a story that is biased in some way.
Oh, I mean, we do not ever tweet political opinions. We do not
ever
tweet.
But if it's in your past... I mean, do you have anyone at the newspaper who writes, who goes out around the corner, goes to restaurants and does restaurant reviews?
We do. Yeah, we do have people who write restaurant reviews. And I do not follow them on Twitter. I don't know whether they actually have a Twitter. So I don't know whether they've previously commented on food,
but
et cetera.
If you're the man, if you are the editor in chief at the newspaper that is writing unbiased restaurant reviews, do you feel that in any way that you are representing the Cavalier Daily in that sense, and therefore potentially causing harm to the restaurant review as not being fair?
Yeah, I think that's I think that's definitely a consideration. With all of my tweets and all of my social media work on Facebook and everything, you know, there is no way to tell political affiliations. There is no way. Obviously, if I tweet like, "Oh, I really enjoyed this meal at this place," that could be something slightly different. But I think people tend to approach that in a slightly different way. I think that the really big considerations that people have is if someone says on Twitter, like, you know, how I can't believe Mitt Romney made that stupid comment, or I can't believe, you know, Obama's making this big deal about Obamacare. And I think that those are the really big things that people are concerned about. So we do have a policy, you know, a written down policy that we make people sign when they join the newspaper, saying that they are not going to express those opinions in public through social media.
This is WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, 11:42. Our guest today, Kaz Komolafe, she's the editor-in-chief at the Cavalier Daily. Call up with your question or comment, 979-0919. 877-WNRN rocks. Guys, can I bring up one of the tweets that you made that brings this topic into question for me?
Sure.
I think one of your recent tweets was that something about your, and I don't have it, I'm paraphrasing, but
I'll probably remember.
Something to do with your tax money leaving your account.
Oh, yeah.
And put it above.
Oh, gosh.
So what comes into mind is, how is she a staunch Republican who believes that government is too big and therefore she's paying too much in taxes?
I am not a Republican. I actually can't vote in this country. I'm Scottish, so I'm nothing. And I mean, I think that obviously that tweet, actually, I think I probably have it. I said something like watching this year's tax money leaving my account has killed my buzz for this weekend. Watching this year's taxes leave my bank account has kind of killed my buzz for the weekend. And I think, I mean, I feel like I try to keep comments as relatable as possible. And I think that most people, Republican or not, kind of do feel that tiny little twinge of sadness when they see a massive thousands of dollars leaving their account in taxes every year. So I feel like there are definitely some comments that you know, if I were questioned on them, I could explain like I'm doing now. But I think that they're comments that you definitely have to take with a pinch of salt.
Well, let's expand it. If the Cavalier Daily has a written rule in terms of that, do you think that the career as a basis, that those outside of the Cavalier Daily, do you think that anyone can have one social media account and work both the personal and the career basis out of it? Or do you think that not everyone can do that, and so that we need to differentiate the factual versus the commentary from different accounts?
Well, I'd say two things to that. I was talking to the social media director at CNBC yesterday, and she was saying, you know, it's really important to have one account and just keep your tweets PC, keep your tweets kind of moderated. But the second thing I would say to that is, you know, it doesn't matter if you have two accounts, you still can't tweet you know, Mitt Romney, it would be the worst thing to ever happen to this country, or Obama is the worst thing to ever happen to this country. Doesn't matter whether you say that from your personal account or your professional account, it's still just not allowed.
Our guest today, Kaz Komolafe. She's the editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily newspaper. All right, so let's chat for a minute about the change at the Cavalier Daily from what used to be strictly print and at some point became online as well. And this upcoming August will be the August 2013 will be the biggest change, at least in history, where the newspaper will be printed and available at the box twice a week, but 7 days a week, which it currently isn't even now, 7 days a week online.
Yeah. So we're going to be moving to a lot more of a digital forward newsroom. So in August, when we come back from school, we are going to have print editions on Monday and Thursday on the stands. They're going to be in a tabloid format, not tabloid content, but tabloid format. And there are going to be a lot more features, a lot more interactive, a lot more infographics, a lot more colorful, production heavy content. And then we're going to have our website. And so the biggest motivation behind that was, you know, we're seeing that people are reading our online offerings. And so if, for example, on Thursday or Wednesday of last week, we had 22,000 visitors to our website, which is, I mean, that's a lot. That's more than the university community. That's more than the university community. Well, more than the university student body, I guess, not the community in its entirety. So we're seeing that people are wanting to go online. They're wanting to, 55% of our readers or online readers are actually accessing the website from their mobile or tablet device. So we really wanted to go and focus our energies where people are actually reading the newspaper. And so this was a huge motivation behind the change, because right now, and it has changed definitely in the past few months, past since the summer, really, as we focus a lot more on our website and our online offerings, but we need to focus even more on them in order to make sure that we're offering as high quality content and as often as possible on our website to the people who are actually reading our newspaper on our website, which appears to be almost a majority of our readership.
Tell me about the discussion that went into bringing this forward. Did you have a noticeable percentage? And by noticeable, I mean more than one or two loud people at the meeting who said, no, we can't do this.
Yeah, we definitely had a noticeable percentage of people who were not behind this decision. I think that it's taken a long time for people to understand kind of where the newspaper is financially and where the newspaper is in terms of where all newspapers are, really. And it's taken a while for people to kind of understand that, but everyone is really on board now, and it's really great to see people kind of tweeting, and everyone has almost everyone has a Twitter account, and almost everyone is tweeting. And so these are all just great signs that people are really on board, and the change in August is going to be a really exciting one. But a lot of people said, you know, UVA is a very traditional university. Obviously, tradition is very important. So a lot of people said, you can't do this. We're a tradition. We're an institution. And I think that actually thoughts like that can be kind of dangerous, because they don't acknowledge the fact that change is almost a necessary evil, and we cannot stay the same for, like we have been doing for 124 years. We just can't afford to do that. It would be kind of, there's no going back from that.
11:50 here on the Wake Up Call. Just a few minutes left with our guest today, Kaz Komolafe, editor-in-chief at UVA's Cavalier Daily newspaper.
Support for WNRN Today comes from L. Oppelman, serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, rifles and handguns, game systems, TVs, cameras and tools, with new inventory arriving every day. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, downtown Lynchburg.
event. WNRN supportive local music includes 2 hours of the best of local and regional artists and bands. Join our volunteer host, Jess Martin, Tuesday nights at midnight for WNRN's Local Motive. This week, Jess will be featuring Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers. That's Charlottesville. Luke Wilson's The Derricks from Charlottesville, and Sun-Dried Opossum from Waynesboro. Discover the best local music. That's WNRN's Local Motive, Tuesday at midnight, brought to you by Far Downers. All right, back in action. Our few minutes left with our guest, Kaz Komolafe. Kaz, tell me a little bit more about, I know they're 10 minutes. Oh, let's jam all these in at the last minute. But we talked about how Root the Box sort of became the headline because of the niche readership at UVA that was specifically for University of Virginia community with the hack on the university's website. But there are some other, as we mentioned earlier, topics that have become somewhat nationwide. A lot of because of the news that Cavalier Daily provided last summer. So, and one of the things that catches my attention is that, again, last summer back with Helen Dragas and Teresa Sullivan issue, is that the Cavalier Daily really got things started on this with their whole Freedom of Information Act request for the internal Board of Visitors emails. How do you live up to that standard, whether you're talking about the Root the Box hacking just this week, the Living Wage rally at the Board of Visitors? Go on.
So I like to think that we always lived up to that standard and people just started noticing this summer. I guess that is why I'm paid or not paid to be the editor-in-chief. So I think that we have had a shift in the way that we approach things. We definitely do. Since the summer, we focus a lot more on kind of digging deeper in investigative journalism and finding out the truth behind stories rather than just sitting back and letting things happen. But I think that really the summer was just an example of a couple of really talented, you know, three or four really talented reporters doing what they did throughout the year and people just noticing.
Tell me about the history of the Cavalier Daily, because you talk about how it getting noticed in this past summer. You're from Scotland.
Yeah.
And you're third year?
Yes, I am.
So for those who don't notice, third year is junior. Translates to junior, but those of us with the background, third year. So, and you say that this has been an ongoing great job by the Cavalier Daily, really just getting the notice. Are there anything that sticks out in the history of the Cavalier Daily that people should have noticed before? Do you have that knowledge in your head?
So, I mean, I think our Hughley coverage was an example of really great on the ground reporting. I think before I was managing editor, so he graduated 2 years ago now, he did a really great investigative piece with the lacrosse team when that happened. And, you know, I think that he actually won the first place for investigative journalism for the VPA award in our category, obviously. So, I mean, I guess it was noticed in that regard. But, you know, there are all those like examples of really great stories that people have written that didn't really spark like the Sullivan story did, I guess, perhaps because, you know, this summer really when it all came to a head, it was an example of higher education, the general trends in higher education. And so the university for good and for bad has kind of become the poster child for higher education problems. And, you know, when people I can't tell you the number of emails I've gotten from people saying, you know, what is UVA like? And you know, can you tell me the stereotypical person at UVA? Because now journalists, when they're doing their kind of huge data heavy kind of stories about universities across the country, they'll choose UVA because UVA is a university that, I guess not in a great way, has kind of been thrust into the limelight.
Take a minute and tell me about emails that you get from the students, because people often think of universities other than specific universities, but general universities are often thought of as raising liberal kids. That's where you, that's where you send the kids to go, and you got to watch out because that's where everything, all the professors are biased. Everything is this heavily left-wing democratic, you know, BS. And granted, that didn't come from my parents, but it certainly comes from a loud section of our general public. But people aren't aware that that's not always the case.
Oh, no.
And that you can get quite a amount of feedback from a hefty section of UVA as well as other universities.
Yeah, I think UVA also is a lot more conservative than I think probably a lot of schools in the North, especially. Not to pinpoint, make any geographical stereotypes here. Awkward. But I think that we definitely receive a lot of feedback. We have a lot of, you know, columnists writing back and forth to each other, that, you know, one person is saying, you know, pro-life, pro-choice, pro, you know, and talking about those issues. But we receive a lot of feedback from the college Republicans, and they kind of, I think that they do believe that our coverage has a liberal bias, but we're really actually trying to avoid things like that. So we're trying to work with them to make sure that we can have as even coverage as we possibly can.
Tamara Winograd here. We'll be getting to Les Temps-Perdue in just a few minutes, the last few minutes of our show today with Kaz Komolafe, Editor-in-Chief at the Cavalier Daily. Kaz, you talk about pro-choice, pro-life. There was an article in the Cavalier Daily that I couldn't even read because the first paragraph, it made me uncomfortable, I guess because of the gross imagery that goes with some of the word choice. And if I remember correctly, part of it was listed as being that media bias must be eliminated in order to show both sides of the abortion debate.
Yeah. This was a story called Picking and Choosing. You should definitely check it out online at cavalierdaily.com. I was gonna say that. It was a great story by one of our first year columnists who's really very talented. And he was talking about how a recent example of, it was kind of abortion clinics, late stage abortion clinics, had kind of been ignored by the media. And, you know, he actually, if you go back and look at the history of his columns, is actually fairly liberal. He's written a lot of pro-Obama columns. He's written a lot of columns about, you know, healthcare. And he wrote this column because I think that it is really important. It's something that we're definitely trying to focus on because, you know, we're a college newspaper, and I think definitely more liberal-minded people tend to gravitate toward college newspapers. I don't know why, but we're definitely trying to eliminate that because media bias can definitely be harmful when you're covering a story and you're trying to cover a story well, because even in the long term, sources that may be on the conservative side won't even want to talk to you because they'll be afraid that you'll skew their words or you are going to paint them in an unfavorable light. So it's incredibly important that media bias is something that we try to focus as much as possible in eradicating.
Yeah, that's that article. And again, it takes us back to where we were a little earlier on the expectations of many of news being skewed. But when you read this article, wow. And it's not just presenting a different side from what many people would argue as that's the kind of article that we need. But goodness gracious, that was, it took a lot of nerve not just to write that, but to publish that.
It was a great story. It was a great story. I never don't publish great stories.
And what was it, your title of that again?
Picking and Choosing.
At CavalierDaily.com.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Again, Kaz Komolafe, Editor-in-Chief at the Cavalier Daily. Kaz, thank you so much for being with us today.
No, it's been my pleasure. I've had a lot of fun.
And people can, how do they follow your Twitter account?
Twitter.com/KazKamalafi. So just follow at KazKamalafi and also follow at Cavalier Daily.
And we're recording this and we'll send along the podcast to you in case you choose to embarrass yourself amongst all your friends and family with the hour that we've just had.
Oh, I will.
All right, Les Temps-Perdue up next, everybody.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com. or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.